Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, February 26, 2015, and it's 1:30 in the afternoon on a sunny, glorious Juneau afternoon. And we are here doing the state's work, happily. I am Senator Costello. I would like to welcome to the committee Senator Ellis, Senator Meyer, Vice Chair Senator Giesel, and Senator Stevens. This afternoon, we have three items before us. We have two pieces of legislation by Senator Coghill, and welcome, Senator Coghill. Senate Bill 15, Life Insurance Premium Tax, and also Senate Bill 47, Life Insurance Annuity Exemptions. So we will hear and hold those two bills. We have several folks here to testify on both of those bills. And then following that, we will continue public testimony on Senate Bill 39, the repeal of the film production tax credit. So for those people online, I just wanted to mention that that's the agenda, and we will hopefully get to Senate Bill 39 so those people who were waiting last meeting have a chance to testify today. So before us, we have Senate Bill 15. This is the first hearing of the bill. Welcome, Senator Coghill. Please feel free to introduce yourself and your staff who will be introducing the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thanks for bringing this these two bills up. I'll give kind of a what I consider the general overview, and then Herman is an intern with the University of Alaska Fairbanks from Eagle River, and has taken the course on political science. So these two bills are things that he has actually studied a little more in depth. They're something that I've done by request. With the work that I have done previously in the trust legislation that we've had from time to time, the tax on insurers is something that we feel is one more element to keep us competitive. So with that, what I'll do is have Herman go ahead and explain the bill, where it sits in the statute. I will try to give the high-level conversation and stay out of his way, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Herman Baquero. I'm a legislative intern for Senator Coghill. The first bill before you, Senate Bill 15, as you can see plainly, is officially a tax cut on life insurance policy premiums that exceed $100,000 or more. The tax cut is a cut from 0.1% to 0.08%, found in Chapter 21 of Title IX in the Authorization of Insurers and General Requirements. You can also see that there is a 2.7% tax on policy or premiums up to $100,000, but that is not being changed at all with this bill. The only other section that is added in here is an applicability date applying to policies after December 31st of 2015. The reasoning for this bill was in 1998, because of just such poor revenue collections on taxes of policy premiums over $100,000, the statutes were finally changed so that the tax over $100,000 on life insurance was set to what it is now, which is 0.1%. For a while, there seemed to be some success then in encouraging Alaskans to start acquiring these premiums that were more than $100,000, and what we later saw was that the number of policies started to drop again following 2006. The reason that it started to drop again was that we were noticing that in particular the state of South Dakota had finally matched and topped our cut on the policy taxes, on the tax on policies over $100,000 to 0.08% as it is now. So essentially, the tax cut we're suggesting lets us match the state of South Dakota again with 0.08 over 100,000 as well. Don't believe I have anything more. I do also have in your packets just a document provided by the Division of Insurance, just showing from 2010 onward the number of policies that have been declining. You'll see from 2010 we had 121 to 2011 to 105, and from 2011 to 2013, 95. So it has been continuously dropping. And what you can also see in another document provided for you from the Department of Revenue is that from the actual revenue acquired in 2014, estimated about $55 million, and we're projecting to roughly maintain that for 2015 and 2016, but perhaps only a few million dollars more. essentially, passing this bill and cutting the tax over 100,000 is expected to generate substantial more revenue for the state Treasury Department. At this point, if there are any immediate questions, I'd be happy to take them from the committee.
Thank you, and I appreciate you coming before the committee explaining the legislation. Are there any questions? Senator Stevens.
I assume that this puts us in a much more advantageous place for Alaskans to benefit. If we make this change, does it put us on a par then with South Dakota, or are there other states out there that would be more advantageous than Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this bill will put us on par with the state of South Dakota in terms of interest in acquiring insurance from trusts in Alaska. I cannot speak for the competition rates between other states, however. I know that this one, however, was in an attempt to match South Dakota, which we could determine was acquiring more policies that could have been diverted to Alaska.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we've been involved in estate planning and trust doctrine issues probably since, you said, 1998. We have been on the competitive edge, and it has attracted a lot of investment cash in Alaska, as well as some good estate planning tools. So this is one thing that we can do to stay that as competitive as can. And I just wanted to mention the committee was the first time that Herman has been able to present this, and I thought he did very well because it's the first time he's ever spoken in front of a committee. So he's done a lot more homework than I have, and so I just wanted to put it on the big question of trust management, estate management, that Alaska's been at the forefront on. New Jersey probably, and maybe it's, I think it's New Jersey, or anyway, on the East Coast, we've competed with them and as well as the Dakotas. So this will probably bring us in line where we can attract more cash. But to be fair, you drop the tax rate, and the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to be with that much less income. It's just that we're losing policies, too. So this is the attempt to gain that back.
Thank you. And it's my understanding, Senator Coghill, that the Alaska Trust Act that was passed by the legislature is really a success story, if you will, and that this legislation is fine-tuning something that the state was at the forefront of a while ago. And so I appreciate the legislation, and we have several individuals here who will probably help with that narrative, because I think that that's an important thing to recognize, is that we've been able to attract activity here in Alaska, and now other states followed in our footsteps, and they are passing us up, so to speak, and this is an adjustment that will have positive benefits for Alaska. Senator Diesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Herman, I wondered if there was a fiscal note to this bill.
through the chair, Senator Geisel, I could defer that question to the Director of Insurance, Lori Winghire. She could better explain the fiscal impact on this.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Herman, good job for your first time. Mm-hmm. Just a quick question. How many times have we had to change this since we started in 1998?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, to my knowledge, we have not changed the tax cut over $100,000 since 1998.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And if you could continue to stay in the room, we have three individuals who will be testifying. Thank you, Senator Coghill. I'd like to invite Lori Winghire from the Alaska Division of Insurance to the table. And if you don't mind, we can...
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Lori Winghire. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. Thank you for having me today. A couple of comments. When we did our analysis of this bill, and we did submit a fiscal note, but we did it as an indeterminate amount, our analysis shows that it's impacting a very small amount of policies, relatively speaking, and in the last year, the number of policies, the difference between what would be collected between the 0.8 or 0.08 and 0.1 was a difference of $15,961 less to the state coffers. Going back to 2011, which would have been the highest amount that we had calculated for Senator Coghill's office, was close to $89,000. But that was based on 105 policies for the calendar year. We did do it as an indeterminate amount. It's kind of a, if you will, a build it and they shall come. The industry feels that that amount of policies that they could make up the difference, and it seems logical that they could. We've seen a decline. It isn't a small amount of money, but again, last year the amount was $15,000, the difference between the two tax rates, and we think they could make it out, make it up in our fiscal note was an indeterminate amount because of that.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, and thank you for that explanation. So, and maybe this is a better question for the sponsor, but what kind of life insurance policies are impacted by this? Is it term? Is it whole life? Is it variable life? Or is it all anything over $100,000 that's a life insurance?
Through the chair, to my knowledge, it would probably mostly, it could be any type, but I would think it would mostly be whole life because it would be estate planning. I could be wrong in that I'm not an estate planning expert, and perhaps the industry that's behind me could answer that better, but I would guess that the higher value policies would not be term insurance, but again, I'm estate planning is probably not my forte, Senator Meyer.
Okay.
Thank you. And next we have Matt Botmacher from the Alaska Trust Company, who could probably fill us in on some more of those details. And so I think we'll get a chance to have your question answered. Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here, Larry. So who's going to benefit from this? It'll be mostly Alaskans. And how much will they benefit?
Well, Alaskans as a consumer will benefit in the fact that they will be paying on their premium that 0.2% or 0.02% lower in the premium, but Alaskans as a whole, we're looking at a volume in premium tax, and hopefully that premium tax will make a greater contribution to the state coffers.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much for providing that to the committee.
Thank you.
Yeah. Next, I'd like to invite Matt Blotmacher from the Alaska Trust Company to the table. Thank you, Matt. And if you could just introduce yourself for the committee and for those listening.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Matthew Blotmacher. I'm the Vice President and a Trust Officer with Alaska Trust Company. And Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity.
Matt, and you know, we spent some time in my office going over this legislation, and I found it very helpful to have sort of a picture of the landscape and how this legislation fits into the broader story of Alaska's role in this industry. Could you share some of that information with the committee members, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So in 1998, the Alaska legislature really started kind of the new age of trust planning, and Alaska was the first state to adopt these new age rules. And since 1998, we've been continually trying to add to those to keep us at the forefront of this type of planning. The original Trust Act was so profound that many other states felt compelled to mirror or copy Alaska's laws. So there are now 15 states that have very similar laws to Alaska, and there's an additional 11 states that have some form of what Alaska has on its books, on theirs. And this bill looks to kind of continue that and keep Alaska on that competitive edge and really levels the playing field with South Dakota, who's currently the lowest. Alaska is the second lowest, and again, just level the playing field.
Senator Meyer, did you want to ask your question of Mr. Blotmacher?
Yes. I don't know if you heard the question. I was just wondering if this pertained, what type of life insurance policy this pertains to.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it will likely pertain mostly to permanent types of insurance more than term, although it could apply to all policies greater with premiums greater than $100,000 a year.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further committee questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Linda Hulbert, who's online with New York Life. Linda, can you hear us?
I sure can. I'm coming to the phone, the table now. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I would like to speak in favor of SB 15. I've been involved with this since the Alaska Trust Act began. It passed, I believe, in 96-97. It's been exciting, as you probably all know, to see the industry grow and develop.
And Linda, I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
Before you continue, do you mind introducing yourself and who you're with for the record?
Absolutely not. My name is Linda Hulbert. I have been in Alaska about 44 years. The first 20 years I've been in Alaska, I was an educator. For the last 25 years, I've worked in the insurance industry, helping Alaskans plan for the future and protect their families.
Thank you.
Does that cover it?
That does it.
Great. Well, I've been involved with the Alaska Trust Act since its inception. I've watched the industry grow. I've watched the protection that has evolved and involved for our clients. The income tax taxation on the life insurance premium for $100,000. There were very few policies at the time when this legislation was first passed that exceeded $100,000. But we've attracted a lot of people who are interested in coming to Alaska and doing their planning, and a lot of Alaskans who want to do their planning. And by changing the premium tax, we've rapidly increased the amount of money that's come into the state of Alaska and for the use in the general treasury. So I would support the change in the percentage of taxation in order to compete. Many policies that we've been placed here have been placed elsewhere, especially in South Dakota, because they've changed the rate to be lower. So I'd like to suggest that this is excellent legislation, which should result in additional money coming into the state. And we all recognize today the importance of revenue generation. This will generate, and I think, additional revenue, and I think it's good public policy for the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Linda. Any committee questions? Seeing none, I appreciate your testimony. With that, we are going to hold Senate Bill 15 until our next committee hearing. And I want to thank the sponsor and also your staff for presenting it. And you are next on the docket with Senate Bill 47. Senator Coghill, welcome back. And please feel free to explain the legislation or have your staff run through it for the committee members.
Madam Chair, thank you for hearing the bill. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let Herman do this one. This one has escaped my attention to the degree that I can
probably articulate it as well as Herman can. So if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I'd just soon have my staff introduce this bill.
Members of the committee, once again, for the record, my name is Herman DeCaro. I'm a legislative intern for Senator Conkell. Unlike Senate Bill 15, which is a cut in taxes on life insurance premiums, Senate Bill 47 is an exemption of of cash surrender values, accrued dividends, and loan values for life insurance and annuity contracts, just as the title says. Essentially, this section is only repealing one section under Title IX, under Chapter 38 of the Alaska Exemptions Act. That is essentially removing the number amount on the exemptions for life insurance. Additionally, there is just an applicability date that you can see that these exemptions can be applied for at the time that this act is passed. Under the Alaska Exemptions Act, there are six headed sections that discuss all the different types of exemptions that can be applied to against the garnishment or acquisition by creditors. Section 38 AS 09.38.025 currently says that life insurance policies that exceed $500,000 or more are subject to garnishment by a creditor through court order. This legislation, Senate Bill 47, simply removes that $500,000 limit, not changing anything else in particular. What we found was that this legislation really puts life insurance aligned with some of the other exemptions found in the Alaska Exemptions Act that do not have value limits as well, such as retirement plans, pension plans, or personal properties, some particular personal properties. We've also been finding that an exemption for life insurance, a full exemption for life insurance, is a more is a better idea for the state of Alaska, particularly because we're finding that more citizens of the state are turning to life insurance plans as new forms of retirement plans and investment savings opportunities, because more of their less employers are now providing retirement plans for them in the first place. And the bill really is an attempt to provide families an attempt to establish and feel secure in some sort of retirement plan that they have created for themselves before an insurance policy has been matured and could be subject to garnishment.
Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to round out some of this conversation because he did a very good job. If you're a public employee, you already have the exemption. If you're investing your own cash, you have this exemption limitation. And so this is just an estate planning tool. This is not to allow people to get out of their debts. It's just that on an estate planning tool, this gives you the right to keep that until it's satisfied. For example, when you die, you're still going to carry and pay off your debts. But this allows that to be whole while you're having that annuity or life insurance put in place. Many places, federal government, state employees, they already get that protection. This is just to allow those who invest their own money in businesses who have that to allow their employees to feel that they can plan their retirement. And certainly if they have debts at the time of the cash call, wherever that may be, usually at their death, that they can pay their debts off. So this is not to allow anybody to escape their responsibility. It just allows it to build during the time that they're working. There's also some pretty good fraud protections in there for trying to escape your responsibility with your cash. So I think that this is a good way to say to people, if you're putting cash into your retirement and if you're a small business owner and you want to do that, this is the way to say, this is off limits. You can pay it for, they can garnish your PFD, your wages, they can get all that. But on the estate planning, this lets them just stay whole. And it just brings them into line with a whole bunch of other people that already get that protection. So that's the best of my knowledge at this point. And I just wanted to round it out with a bigger context. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. My plan was to take my cash with me. Are you telling me that's not going to happen? Just a question. Can you tell me in simpler terms that I can understand, who does this benefit? Who does it harm?
Well, at this point, it helps those who are building a estate through planning that are industry-based, basically. So at this point, I'm going to have to defer to some of those people who probably work in this industry better, but my understanding is at this point we've put a cap on it. They can actually garnish above, which diminishes their ability to do estate planning. It helps those who want to get satisfaction of debt while people are building their annuities. These can be garnished at this point above the $500,000 level. And for those who are exempt from this, generally, it's a huge advantage for them to want to go into the public world rather than into the private world. And so there's incentives and disincentives for both sides of that question. And now I'm right on the edge of my knowledge.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, you asked who this would be helping. Ultimately, this is meant to be helping the beneficiaries of these insurance policies while the policies remain unmatured. Once those policies have matured and the assets that are being transferred to those beneficiaries are now the assets of the beneficiary, when it becomes the property of the beneficiary, if that beneficiary does commit any act or commits anything that could be subject to restitution or garnishment, then those assets are subject to garnishment. Those assets are subject to whatever is deemed just for them. That does not, having the assets exempt while the policies are unmatured is simply granting a feeling of security for those who are seeking insurances to be part of their estate management while they're in that planning process. Once the policies have matured, the assets have been now the assets of the beneficiary, they are up for grabs by someone who would try to seek restitution or some kind of just claim.
Senator Stevens?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Senator Coghill. I have to excuse myself. Herman has done a very good job of explaining that, and then any public testimony will probably round out that conversation. Thank you for hearing it, though. I appreciate it, and I'm going to have to leave the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'd like to invite the Division of Insurance Director again, Lori Wingheyer, to explain the fiscal note and answer any questions that committee members may have.
Again, my name is Lori Wingheyer. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance. I don't know how many questions I can answer on this, but I will try. This bill, as you can see, it amends Title IX, so it doesn't directly impact Title 21, which is where the insurance statutes are. But we did do a fiscal note so that the committee would know that we do not believe as respects insurance it will have an impact to the state. We certainly don't see how it will have an impact to the division or what we collect on premiums or premium tax. We also don't, as far as the structure of the bill or what its intent is, we do not see an issue as respects insurance or the language of the bill as it's written or the intent.
Any questions from committee members? Does the administration have a position on the legislation?
I don't know if the administration does it, but I'm not sure.
Thank you, and I'd like to ask those listening or who are online to mute your phone, please. We are getting some feedback. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next, I'd like to invite Matt Blotmacher again to the table with the Alaska Trust Company. Matt, welcome, and again, I appreciate the time you took with me in my office to provide some background information on this legislation, and if you could introduce yourself for the record and, you know, talk about your opinion of the bill.
Absolutely. Again, for the record, my name is Matthew Blotmacher. I'm the Vice President and a Trust Officer with Alaska Trust Company. And SB 47, again, kind of helps to keep Alaska on that in the top tier of states for estate and financial planning in general. And it looks to protect those who are interested in engaging in the best forms of financial and estate planning that they can, if they can.
Okay. Any questions from committee members? Matt, you had mentioned to me the four-year look-back from the state mm-hmm. versus a 10-year look-back from the federal government, because the concern possibly there's a chance that someone would purchase the policy and then perhaps go into bankruptcy. And so as far as protection there to make mm-hmm. sure that that doesn't happen, can you talk about those fraud elements that you're aware of?
Most definitely. Two things that I'd like to speak to on that. First is that this legislation wouldn't change the fact that these policies would be assignable as collateral for banks or other kind of lending institutions. So if the policy wasn't assigned, it could be exempt. But if it were assigned, it would be attachable. And so nothing changes there. Also, Alaska has very good laws, arguably some of the best in the nation, in regard to protecting kind of public policy interests and ethical interests, where individuals can engage in estate and financial planning, but only to an extent that doesn't allow them to willfully defraud creditors. And the courts would still have the ability to look at the facts and circumstances of each case and determine whether somebody engaged in this type of planning for you know, to intentionally defraud a creditor, or whether they had other legitimate intents. There's a look-back period as far as the state is concerned, and at the federal level, when assets are put into a trust at the state level, there's a four-year look-back period if they were to claim federal bankruptcy, where the state could pull back those assets within any time in that four-year period. And at the federal level, it's 10 years. Most bankruptcy proceedings are at the federal level, and so it would take somebody with extreme foresight to be able to plan out their ultimate bankruptcy a full decade in advance. So those are quite adequate procedures to prevent that type of malicious activity.
And do you have information on other states' policies in regards to creditors?
Most definitely. South Dakota and Nevada are both down to 2 years. Ohio is at 18 months. Delaware is at 3 years. Alaska is the highest, with matching a number of other states at 4 years.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions from committee members? Okay. Seeing none, thank you again for providing that testimony and that background. Next, I'd like to invite Linda Hulbert, who's online. And Linda, if you don't mind introducing yourself again for the record.
Not at all. My name is Linda Hulbert. I live in Fairbanks. I have been in Alaska for 44 years, 20 years as an educator, and the last 25 years in the insurance industry, helping families plan for the future. I'd like to speak to this bill because it's one that's very near and dear to me. The state has very strong, as you know, fraudulent transfer rules. What this bill enables people to do is to legitimately plan for their future, and to use these techniques to be able to help plan to secure themselves and their families. It doesn't protect against child support. There are many different reasons where it can be invaded, but this has a legitimate planning process. I would like to mention that we're just trying to come on par with numerous other states
the state of New York, the state of Florida, the state of Texas, the state of Arizona, all of that have similar laws to this one. So this brings us on par with them for planning purposes for our citizens. I'd like to just give you a scenario. Lots of Alaskans have businesses. They've invested in their business, they've invested in their communities, they've invested in their employees, they take a lot of risk. They rarely can put away money in the early years to save for retirement. They put the extra money that they earn back into their businesses to improve their businesses, their employees, and their communities. This gives them an alternative means when they do have money to be able to save for their own retirement. Frequently, they reach the end of their working life and they have a business which they may or may not be able to sell. Maybe they're going to have to liquidate. Maybe they hope to sell to employees an exit strategy plan. It's certainly helpful to have a place where they can save for retirement through the use of annuities and also to put money in life insurance where they know they can secure the future of their families and children and maybe help continue their businesses. So I would like to suggest that this is a bill that will be helpful to Alaskans. It brings us on par with other states. I also believe it will encourage people to save in these mechanisms. And I really do believe it could very readily be a revenue raiser for the state of Alaska. By encouraging people to be able to save in this means, that's 2.7% of every premium that goes into the life insurance or the annuity, which is payable to the state of Alaska. Rarely do most people put over $100,000 in, so that would primarily be $2,700 per $100,000 that would help the state in these times of fiscal crisis. So although I can't guarantee it, I can say that it would certainly make people look more favorably on using these mechanisms for saving for their future and providing for their families. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Holbert. Any questions from committee members? With that, I want to say thank you to Senator Coghill and Herman. Certainly, is one of the university students here in the Capitol. You are among some of our best and brightest, and I appreciate the work you've done on both of these bills. And we look forward to hearing them again at some time in the near future, at which point we will open the public testimony and have one final opportunity for committee members to answer questions. So with that, I want to thank you, and I'm going to take an at-ease to get members who are getting ready to testify on Senate Bill 39 a chance to collect themselves in the LIO. Thank you. We'll take an at-ease. Labor and Commerce Committee back to order. And as promised, we are continuing the public comment for Senate Bill 39, which is legislation that repeals the Film Production Tax Credit Program. And with that, I wanted to thank everyone for your patience from last meeting and want to remind everyone that any decision to go beyond 3 minutes just means that your friends and neighbors will possibly have to wait longer. So I appreciate any help in that effort. And with that, I want to say I will begin in Matt Sue, then I will be going to the OFMET group, and I will just go down the list, which is essentially the people who signed up first will be testifying first, and we will be going around the state. Again, I want to thank everyone for their patience, and with that, I will begin with Sharon Hahn. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Hi, I'm Sharon Hahn, Alaska resident for over 20 years, business owner and nonpartisan registered voter. Would you like me to continue?
Please, thank you.
I do hereby present my testimony to SB 39, a bill for an act entitled An Act Repealing the Film Production Tax Credit, providing for an effective date by repealing the effective dates of Section 31 through 33, Chapter 51, SLA 2012, and providing effective dates. This bill was first introduced February 4, 2015, and sponsored by Senator Stoltz. The following testimony is based upon my personal opinion, experience, research, and observation. This testimony was not prepared for any political interest group, committee, organizations, corporations, companies, or any personal, political, or monetary gain. The state of Alaska rapidly evolved since 1990 from being heavily dependent upon the lower 48 states in respect to satellite feed, media information, and delayed entertainment releases. Back in 1990, here in Alaska, I personally was unable to obtain a career position in my trade profession because I held several union cards in the entertainment industry and broadcasting communications. Thus, I was forced to resign from all affiliations. When SB 230 developed in 2008 and became AS 43.98.030 with the film production tax credit, I became excited, knowing that when the word got out to the entertainment industry, many major motion picture companies would seriously consider filming in Alaska, thus providing the state small businesses, residents with revenue, technical development, and improved communications. Many of these developments have been necessary for the film production teams to work in the state. By 2010, I obtained a master's and joined the ranks of many Alaskan graduates from Full Sail University, a leading teaching institution for the entertainment industry. With my fellow alumni and other creative Alaskans, we have experienced the growth, development, job, and numerous other benefits provided by the Film Production Tax Credit Incentive, AS 43.98.030. I respectfully understand the need to rid non-essential programs to correct the state financial deficit, but I believe that SB 39 has the intent to eliminate the Film Production Tax Credit Incentive Program in its entirety. The elimination of the Film Production Credit Incentive would grossly affect the state's future revenue and development, which has been begun to see a positive effect among several Alaskan communities, small businesses, and provide new skills, jobs, and new category of employment for our future. According to SLA 2012, Chapter 51, Article 3, Section 29, and Section 44.33.231C, on request that the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, through the Film Production Promotion Program, shall assist the Department of Revenue in the administration of Alaska Film Production Incentive Program, AS 44.25.110. If those that are in the position of adhering to the section of SLA 2012, Chapter 51.
Sharon, if you don't mind wrapping up, you're going over about a minute at this point.
Okay, I'm quickly done. The revenue would be, we clearly see the growth and potential of realizing the Alaska Film Production Incentive Program with a tax credit is still in its infancy and needs to be matured. Such as parents taking personal financial sacrifices to make sure their children, our lawmakers should not completely eliminate the film production tax credit to satisfy our overall budget. If it wasn't for the Alaska Production Film Incentive Tax, Alaska would have continued to be less likely placed for production. Our state would continue to be a slow delay, speed, technology, and economic development, continually being totally dependent on the benefits of oil industry, military, and other limited interest industries invested here in Alaska. Thus, the speed of our state with development and gain and any prior revenue losses would have kept us dependent on the Bill 48 such as we were in 1990, 2000, and 2008. Therefore, I urge each committee and seriously to reconsider the total elimination of the Alaska Film Production Incentive Program and Tax Credit Initiative. I respectfully understand the terminology and the financial amounts stated as law since 2012 with the film production tax credit is, in my opinion, excessive and beyond the amount for recovery. I also respectfully respect consideration to the fact that the intent of the original bill and incentive program still in its infancy should be nurtured for a few more years with consideration of redesigning its financial terms and allowing it to continue to attract major motion film and television production companies to Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Just like to remind members that out of respect for the other people who are publicly going to testify on this legislation, if you could do your best to keep your testimony to 2 minutes and not six. Thank you. With that, we'll be going off net to J.C. Peterson from Anchorage. J.C.?
Hi, there's some nerds. My name is J.C. Peterson, owner of Alpine Accounting. I would like to talk in opposition of Senate Bill 39. I'm a CPA who conducts audits for the film tax credit verification. Prior to the final application being received by the Alaska Film Office, my audit of the production expenditures covers almost 100% of the funds spent on the production in Alaska. Every dollar spent here is looked at to make sure that it was spent in accordance with state of Alaska statutes and regulations. I then provide a report with the adjustments that I found to the state of Alaska Film Office for their review. Having performed these audits under the old statutes and now under the new statutes, I can tell you that I have seen a shift in the expenditures. Previously, production companies were bringing lots of crew from outside Alaska to film shows, commercials, documentaries, etc. This can be seen in the reportable statistics in 2013. 79% of wages were to non-residents. With the change of statute that occurred in 2012 that became effective on July 1st, 2013, the main emphasis was to provide more Alaskan jobs and have less money leaving the state. This is occurring. Not only are productions now receiving less money for out-of-state residents, as little as 5%, but the number of Alaska residents that are now being utilized on production sets has increased more than double when comparing the amount of Alaska employees to non-Alaskans. In 2013, 21% of wages were made to Alaskans. In 2014, 43% of wages were made to Alaskans. This number continues to grow. Next year, you will see another increase. Based on the 11 tax credits that are verified under the new program, 6 of which are still pending approval by the commissioners, I have noted that 54% of the wages paid in Alaska are going to Alaska residents based on an aggregate of the 11 productions. I have seen production companies claim as high as 93% of wages as Alaskan wages. Notably, commercials and reality TV shows have focused more on hiring locally.
And thank you. If you could wrap up, please.
Yes. The government has suspended the program that the state tries to fund essential services in a time of economic oil crisis. One tax credit program that has been suspended should not be singled out from the rest of the tax credit program to be taken off the books for economic purposes. There is no current economic benefit for children already suspended program. If removing tax credit programs from the state is a solution to our revenue problem, then the same should apply to fishing oil and all other tax credits that the state is actively paying out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, Tess Weaver.
Hello, this is Tess Weaver, and I am in opposition of Bill 39. I want to thank the committee and those in my Alaska film family for their inspiring testimonies. I've had a freelance styling business since 2010. I've worked on all the films from Big Miracle to Frozen Ground, and I've paid off a student loan with Big Miracle, which was an amazing accomplishment. I have since been a lead stylist on a number of national and international commercials, and as Mr. Meyer has spoken on Tuesday, with my level of experience I have now have because of the incentive, I am able to be mobile, but I would never want to leave my beautiful home state, as I am proud of the reputation my film family and I have created with production companies all around the world. I love having the opportunity to share all our state has to offer, including Alaska Native culture through costuming. With the $1 million plus costing department budgets each film has allocated, I myself am proud of the money I have spent within our local economy. I do my best to shop at local small businesses, and it brings me great joy to support them. I have trained a plethora of Alaskan residents who have greatly expressed interest in working in film, and I'm constantly responding to emails and calls on how to get involved in the industry. The incentive works, and it has endless possibilities for employment and economic growth. Please don't take away what we have worked hard to create. We are at the tipping point of extreme growth, and now is the time for the incentive to truly take flight. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to go to the Anchorage LIO. We have four individuals so far, and let's start with Michael Collier.
Hello, my name is Mike Collier. I've come to speak in opposition of SB 39. I work in this state. I've worked in this state for about 15 years now. I started out in the news, and I covered a lot of you for your elections, your various programs that you've been trying to pass. After the news, I moved into reality TV and movies, and the incentive gave the opportunity for me and hundreds of others to do that. And I sit before you as one of many Alaskans who have our own projects that we're putting together. At this point, I've got almost six figures of a seven-figure budget raise. It's an all-Alaskan project. Without this incentive, that money needs to be returned to investors. This is 70 jobs that I'd like to bring to this state. This is a story that was written by an Alaskan. It's directed by an Alaskan. We want to tell our stories, and we want to start an industry in this state, and we want support to get going. We can make a $1 billion industry. We can provide a little bit more security to the state so that when we're looking at $60, $50 oil prices, we're not screwed like we are right now. I understand that the state has dire fiscal crisis. I'm sort of a political wonk. I followed your careers after I left the news. I know what the state is facing. There is a way to make this work so that Alaskans can still work, so that we don't have to move or we don't have to go hungry to do what we love in the place we love. And I ask that you consider any way to make this system work so that we can weather this time of low economic low oil prices, so we can get to a point where, you know, when the oil prices go back up, we haven't killed an industry. This is an industry that needs to sustain, and it doesn't cost very much, especially during the period we're looking at where we're trying to bridge this budget gap. It's not going to make or break our bank account, and it's something that when we get out of this, we're in a good position to diversify our economy, which is something I know that all of you in that room desperately want to do, desperately know that it's something the state needs to do, and this is something we've been working on for 6 years, and it's been quite successful so far, and we're ready, I think myself and others are ready to kick it into overdrive and provide an Alaskan film industry that's truly our own and not Hollywood. So with that, I thank you for the time, and yeah, that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Levi Taylor in Anchorage.
Yes, hello. My name is Levi Taylor. I'm in opposition of the bill. I grew up here in Anchorage wanting to be an inspiring filmmaker since I was in junior high. In 2009, I made my first successful film with about 150 local Alaskans who are all pretty much hobbyists and students, and we won some major awards down in Hollywood. And we're offered some tremendous opportunities to stay there and to continue working. However, because of the incentives that happened to come up around just shortly after that, we're given a lot of interest in producing media in Alaska because of that. And because of that, I decided to come back and stay. While I've been in my creative cave developing that project, my colleagues who I started working with have risen in the ranks tremendously, and I just wanted to testify that the industry has grown here on a local level, and it's just impressive in just such a shorter period of time. And please don't kill a rising industry that offers this diversity when it's already set to be reviewed in with a sunset clause here in just a couple of years. Please let us prove to you that we can make this industry continue and continue to rise up the way it has. Thank you.
Thank you, Levi. Next, I invite Laura Simpkins from Eagle River.
Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Laura Simpkins. I'm a graduate of U of A in journalism with an emphasis in film and television production. I've been working in the industry for about 25 years here in Alaska, and I've developed three scripts of a 13-part series based on Alaska Native Languages and Culture, which is an educational television series, to be hopefully one day produced by Alaskans for Alaskans to perpetuate language and culture here in the state. And I think that's a very important piece to remember, is that it's about perpetuation of our cultures and languages. And to not belabor the points that have already been made by my colleagues, I would like to further just address the fact that eliminating this tax credit doesn't eliminate the things that you don't like, which are the reality television series that are not important to our people. And they won't go away. Those people won't go away because they don't spend any money in our state. What they do is come here, spend very little money with very few people, and go away. And you see something on television that you don't like. What we will lose will be the big budget productions, which provide many jobs for many of us and enable us to obtain things like insurance to the labor union, which provides for our families. I think that I'd like to end it there and allow time for my colleagues to continue to help you understand how this diversifies our economy and strengthens our foundation and allows us to be stronger together than we were before. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura. And next, I would like to invite Mary Wasky to testify from Eagle River.
Hello to the committee members, and thank you for listening to my opposition to Senate Bill 39. I'm speaking not only for myself and my special interest as a published fiction author with interest from Hollywood to make one of my novels into a movie. Rather, I'm representing Alaska's growing senior population, many of whom, like me, now have time to develop our creative work as fiction writers. With the incentives in place, I was able to interest a Hollywood producer in making a television movie out of my novel that was published last summer. Producers on the team that created Whiplash, you might have noticed it won 3 Academy Awards Sunday. We were in the paperwork stages when she went to the film office only to be completely discouraged by what's happening. The budget that our level of production offered had Alaskan hire and ground spend, and we would have had 90% local hire. We were creating product. We weren't just servicing Hollywood people or reality shows. With our kind of project and with the others that you've just listened to, there are other benefits. The PR for tourism, the ripple effect throughout the state in terms of businesses that support this kind of production, and keeping our young people in the state. With the other entities like oil in danger of decline, the film world could be an additional career and employment opportunity for Alaskans. There's a huge group of citizens involved in writing and hoping to get into the media. Since Alaska is tops in happiness and well-being with a growing senior population, let's look at this again. They're writers, they're readers, they're moviegoers, they're looking for second careers. Keeping the film incentive program in place would not only seniors but other Alaskans to present our state as it really is, not as some outsiders like in the entertainment industry are depicting it now with reality shows. When you run the numbers too, it's apparent that this is a tiny portion of Alaska's serious budget deficit. It's like putting a band-aid on a heart attack to pull this program. Keeping the film incentive program is something that could grow. It could bring growth and dollars to our wonderful state. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate your testimony. With that, next I'm going to go to Deborah Schult out of Anchorage, who's calling in off net.
Thank you, Senator Cascallo and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Deborah Schultz. I'm a longtime resident of the state and current president of the Alaska Film Group. We're Alaska's largest nonprofit trade association of working film and video professionals. I've worked full-time in the film industry for the past 30 years. Our membership is aware of the economic crisis that faces Alaska today, brought on in part by our lack of economic diversity. Cause and effect. We know no success story happens overnight. We know no star athlete wins a trophy without years of hard work. And that's precisely the reason I speak to you today. You heard prior testimony from the Manhattan Institute, claiming Alaska's film incentive just doesn't pencil out. There's hard data to the contrary of his arguments, however. Today I'd like to cite figures from the 2013 Feature Film Production Report. It looks at feature film production on a global scale. I'd be glad to send any members of Labor and Commerce Committee copies of this 25-page report, with all sources duly noted. In 97, Canada was the first to offer significant tax incentives, and their model was quickly copied around the world. By 2013, more than 40 U.S. states had a program in place, Alaska among them. The success stories take time. 108 films were produced that year, 70 in the United States. Among those, 18 were shot in Louisiana. In Canada and California, another 15 each. In the UK, 12. In Georgia, 9. These 108 films represent 7.6 billion in direct production spending and tens of thousands of jobs, 84,000 of them to be exact. In 2013, in Louisiana, their program was only 10 years old. 15 of the films shot there had completed their audit by year's end, revealing that 13,690 jobs had been created. These figures are trackable. The audits revealed further that Louisiana's share totaled $587 million. With the exception of California, all of the top filming locations producing these 108 films had a substantial film incentive program in place. I believe this is key, in place, which is where we need to stay if we're to compete. Breathtaking locations are no longer enough to lure filmmakers. In today's global film business, locations are trumped by economic realities. And that is our reality. So I urge you to consider our future when you cast your vote. A program suspended, but still on the books, protects our future. It offers hope to those investing in careers and businesses. So shut the door to the diversity we need for today and for the future prosperity of our state and its people. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz, and I would be more than happy to receive the 2013 feature film report from you and pass that on to the members to help balance out the information that the committee has heard, and I spoke with Senator Ellis about such efforts, so I appreciate your offer to share that information with us. Thank you. Next, I'd like to welcome...
Sorry. I just send it to you.
Excuse me?
I'll be glad to send it to you. Thank you, okay. Senator Ellis.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to welcome Bob Crockett from Anchorage.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Bob Crockett, General Manager of PIXIC, a film production company and subsidiary of Mad Development Corporation. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to speak for this important issue today. We just returned from being in the field with a crew of 20 Alaskans filming in Talkeetna, the Matanuska Glacier, and Whittier, where we chartered a vessel at the Blackstone Glacier. Our crew from South America, of all places, were amazed at the spectacular scenery presented to them each day of our shoot. In addition, we hired an Iditarod musher that told us if it wasn't for this windfall of dollars being provided for the production, he would not have been able to complete his food drop for the race this year that jeopardized his ability to compete. This project allowed him to move forward. I'm speaking today opposing SB 39. PIXIC and NANA invested millions in this industry because we had a commitment from the state for 10 years. We knew it was a growing industry that would allow our company to realize a return on investment over time. Last session, the amount of time to realize those investments were reduced from 10 years to 4 years. Now with the introduction of SB 39, we're looking at a sunset of July 1, 2015, a daunting challenge for any business. We understand the fiscal crisis the state of Alaska is in right now. We don't want to be part of the problem, but rather part of the solution. The answer is diversification. It takes time to develop an industry, and all reports indicate we're on the right track. As an example of our commitment, PIXIC has joined Northern Lights Media in a partnership to produce a number of concepts featuring 13-week episodes, each that will focus on the real Alaska. It will be the first time two major Alaskan companies have committed to producing content for national and international consumption in an unscripted television series. Our production team is all Alaskan, and we'll be sharing with the world shows with an authentic Alaskan perspective. As we all know, the tax incentive program is basically suspended through actions taken by Governor Walker. This action eliminated all three film office positions in the capital budget, citing our current fiscal crisis. This action means Alaska is not permanently closed for business, but if SB 39 is allowed to move forward and ultimately pass, we'll be alerting our global markets as well as our Alaskan businesses and entrepreneurs that we are permanently closed. Madam Chair and members of this committee, I urge you not to move SB 39 out of committee and continue to allow us to be part of Alaska's fiscal solutions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bob. And next, I would like to invite Maya Salganek of the UAF Film Program to testify.
Last Tuesday, we heard from Mr. Myers from the think tank group, the Manhattan Institute. And Mr. Myers spoke about the tax incentives for film from a theoretical point of view. Conceptually, these tax incentives may be like deodorant. Doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you're the only one in the room not using the stuff, people are going to shy away. Tax incentives are an economic reality in this and many industries worldwide. It is not just states that compete for our film productions, it's nations. Why? Because this entertainment and media market in the United States is estimated to be over $589 billion in revenue generation this year. By the time my students graduate, they expect it to be a $679 billion industry. These are dollars, many of which will be spent on location somewhere. Alaska is in the game and on the map, and we have been a very competitive player. Our efforts have led to dozens of television shows, commercials, and films, and as every business owner knows, development is an investment. This investment has to be nurtured both at the grassroots level as well as through the Denali high vantage of government. With the state in an economic pinch, we can either play or fold. I assure you that many other states would gladly take up our chips, and all that invested effort up to this point will be a total loss to us. Today in Fairbanks, I had 17% of my students absent from class this morning because they're on set for a television show. They are working both behind and in front of the camera, and they are getting paid to be there. As a faculty member, I am constantly barraged with film production companies searching to hire talented students to work on their sets. As students excel in class, I recommend them for work, and then they miss my class. It's a great problem. I'm happy to manage. Our film students are gaining real-world experiences in the industry they are training themselves for, even before they graduate. When Mr. Myers said that the film workforce is highly mobile, this is true, but only to an extent. Producers prefer to hire trained locals whenever possible. What's more, Alaskans provide a unique and valuable asset to the film industry. They understand the environment and community that inspires creative content to begin with. This is an asset that cannot be outsourced by a highly mobile worker from outside. It takes local talent and commitment to establish and expand this industry in Alaska. Film production companies want our stories, and we need their dollars and distribution networks. It's a long-term relationship, not an affair. In fact, we're ready to be committed partners for life, but we need the blessing from the state. The UA Board of Regents considers the UA Film Program a high-demand initiative priority in the FY16 budget. This has been based on the growth of our program and attracting new majors and our success in developing a nationally recognized film training program, which is starting to put a lot into work as we've heard. Our students are coming from across the state and from Texas, Wyoming, and California. The real question here is this. Do we want Alaskans to take the lead in fostering and developing 21st century high-tech jobs in media communications? If so, then maintaining the passing kind of program for film is the first step. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Natalie Lamont to testify.
My name is Natalia Lamont, a 9,000 generation Yupik Eskimo from Tuluksak, Alaska, population 400 plus chose the corporation region. Currently, I call Anchorage home, and I have 5 children, Ariel, Sarah, Jack, and Nikki, with my husband of 21 years, Patrick. Growing up in the village of Tuluksak, all we had was KYUK Channel 4 until Ragnick and Orcs came along. And back then, they had good American values reflecting in the scripts and the storylines. Thanks to the Alaska Native Poets Project of 2012 and the Alaska Native Heritage Center, I got to write a play for theater with instruction from established talent from the TV and theater industry like June Bruce Scott and Randy Reinholz and many more talented instructors. Later on, I took a screenwriting course with funding from the state of Alaska, and thank you very much for supporting my education. I took a class for screenwriting through the Alaska New Media and Deborah Shieldit through Christopher Keane, who was our instructor. And I wrote 2 screenplays for TV, Velma Wallace, Bird Girl, and The Man Who Followed the Sun. Or I called it True Rebels, as I wrote it with Yupik Eskimos talking in Yupik Eskimo, and the Gutchen speaking in English as their mother tongue, except in ancient times long before civilization, as I want to see at least one Yupik film with English subtitles in my lifetime, because growing up, I only saw Caucasian men with painted faces dressed like Indians, because there were or no native actors. But in my lifetime, things have changed, and seeing movies with real native actors and language is now possible. Most recently, I would like to thank Dark Winter Productions, Vera Stubblad, and Joe Bedard, who gave me the chance to study drama as an actor understudy of the talented Miss Irene Bedard. Thanks again to the generous support of Siri. I like watching PBS and mostly Sesame Street as a young kid, and to this day, it is my preferred station for my own children, Channel 7. I never imagined I would bring you a window into my Yupik Eskimo culture and language with the puppet Raven and in our family. Thanks to the generous support again of Siri for funding the show and broadening it by adding other Alaska Native languages. This show has given me the opportunity to write short scripts in simple format for our children, and we can preserve our culture and language in film format. I'm kindly asking you as my legislators to please keep the Alaska film incentives going, because I've seen the progress and the days of filming in Alaska are now possible. I got to be an extra on The Big Miracle, which was a great experience and well paid for a few days. So please don't eliminate the chance to write and take away my scripts to the next level, and thanks so much for taking time to listen to me. Natalia Lamont.
Thank you, Natalia. Next, I'd like to welcome Irene Bedard, Anchorage.
Hello. My name is Irene Bedard. I am Yupik and Yupik. My family is from the village of Koyuk, and I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska. I am the president of Sleeping Lady Films, Virgin Giants Productions, which is an Alaskan native-owned film production company, along with my CEO, Tom Denny. My reason for speaking today is to stand against in opposition of SB 39 and to firmly state how keeping the Alaska Film Tax Program is an affirmative move for Alaska, and to clear up misconceptions on who will be hurt by the elimination of this program. I am set at this moment to bring two feature films to the state of Alaska. We are in pre-production. Velma Wallace's Two Old Women, which is one of Alaska's great stories and international bestseller, and it would be a shame to not have to be able to produce it in the state of Alaska and indigenous countries. Another project is Touchdown on the Tundra, which is another great inspiring Alaskan story, the incredible true story of the Railroad football team. It would be a shame to have to move elsewhere to Canada. There is no question that the current fiscal crisis is difficult for Alaska and Alaskans. One of the reasons the film tax credits were introduced was to help create diversity within the state. The film tax credit was to be utilized by not only tapping into an international billion-dollar industry, but by enhancing other existing ones, such as tourism and film-related services. So often I hear in my travels, where I travel all around the world, I'm a UN representative as well, with the American Indian Enterprise and Business Council, and I hear about how so many people would like to travel or have seen different parts of Alaska on television and would love to travel there. People have heard the story of the Bell Whalers for the last 7 years, and there are people who wish to go there for to see the football field. This promotes long-term positive marketing for tourism and cultural tourism for the state of Alaska. By cutting the film tax credits, the problem will be compounded, not reduced. That's basic economics in the long-term planning sense. The impact of the show shot in Alaska since the credits were first introduced is a complex matrix that is not easy to calculate. Having the opportunity to see this producers from all over the world, we can tell you that these shows and films have
created tremendous awareness and desire to boost it. What does that work economically? Alaska could easily enjoy the same successes British Columbia, Canada has achieved. Not only has film and television brought millions upon millions of revenue to the province, it has also brought increased tourism. As an industry, it is the largest employer in British Columbia, Louisiana, and New Mexico has also seen unprecedented growth, both in terms of revenue from the film industry, but also from international tourism, which can contribute directly to the production chapter. It's tested around the times it takes innovation and creativity to not only get through, but to thrive and create new opportunities. Anyone can cut and slash programs and incentives, but it takes a real leader to make them work. There are a number of ways that this can work for and indeed be a tremendous benefit for Alaskan consumer industry. For some reason, there is a blind community in Alaska from Texas that's going to hurt Hollywood.
Excuse me, Irene?
The members of Alaska. Yes.
Oh, if you don't mind submitting the remainder of your comments in writing, I'd be happy to share them with the committee. I would like to continue with some other members.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your powerful testimony. I'd like to go now to the Homer LIO where Ken Lanfield has been waiting. He is the only person I have at that location. Ken, please feel free to begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Ken Lanfield, and I do live in Homer, and I have for about 35 years or so, and I'm addressing you today to speak in opposition to SB 39. As you've heard already, and as we all know, there is a budget gap issue, which does need to be addressed, but I just don't see how eliminating the production tax credit plan will help with the budget issues that we have today. There is a sunset provision, of course, as you know, and the governor has also suspended the program. So it's essentially on hiatus already. I just don't see how eliminating the program will do anything but harm. There's just no downside to keeping the program on the books. As has been mentioned by others, part of the reason we're in the boat that we're in today is because of a lack of diversity in our economy. And this, I was so excited when the tax credit plan was put into operation, because I thought, well, finally now here's, you know, a bit of diversity being added to our economy in an exciting sort of way as well. I personally have no connection at this time, nor have I benefited from the tax credit program, although I'd sure like to. So I really think there's just no advantage to killing the program. It's already been suspended, and there is a sunset plan. So I urge you not to pass this bill and kill the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you for your patience. With that, I'd like to go to James Walker, who's calling in from Los Angeles.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Chairwoman and ARL committee members. You hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you for your service to the great state of Alaska. Over the past 24 months, my company and colleagues have made a significant investment toward protecting Alaska's economic future. We saw an opportunity unlike any other in Alaska's history to create technology-driven industries supported by a newly trained and high-skilled workforce. I listened to the recorded comments and questions from last Thursday, February 19th committee session. I appreciate and understand everyone's criticisms and concerns about the film tax incentive. However, my interpretation, experience, and position regarding the benefits and value of the film tax incentive is different. This program is actually a significantly untapped resource for Alaska, excuse me, for Alaska and its citizens to establish technology-driven industries and promote a new season of economic development that is unattainable in any other way. What I find interesting interesting among the common criticisms of the program is the vast misunderstanding of how to effectively deploy it to maximize the ROI for the Treasury. Over the past 2 years, I have traveled to Alaska to explore the economic and commercial climate and develop contacts with local businesses and civic leaders to better understand how to work hand-in-hand with Alaskan entrepreneurs, educators, and artists to utilize the program to generate a viable and profitable motion picture industry that can then furthermore help incubate other technology-driven industries and naturally stand out to foreign from the economic activity generated by motion picture and television production. However, in order to achieve this and become exceedingly clear that all aspects of the entertainment industry needs to be in Alaska. That Alaska has to be more than just a filming destination, which is just one piece of the puzzle to making a movie or TV show. That producers, such as myself here in Los Angeles, need to consider Alaska from the other aspects of the production process. To solve this need, my Alaskan partners and colleagues decided to utilize the Film Tax Program to establish long-term, highly skilled jobs that make up the other side of the motion picture and television production process, the jobs of the post-production phase. This is what happens after the filming has completed. It is the film editing, visual effects, animation, music scoring, data and IT management, and software development, engineering, and programming. Whereas film typically lasts for a couple of months, the post-production phase can last from 9 months to well over a year. The skills promoted by these jobs transcend more than just movies and TV. They are sought after by government contractors, advertising marketing firms, education, information technology and internet firms, the military, biotech, medical services, tourism, aviation, and every other industry that needs highly skilled labor educated in technology and media. And for that matter, the motion picture and television production industry is the only industry that can bring the capital investment needed to create these jobs and eventually the economies of scale that will promote an attractive economic environment to convince companies in these other industries to come to Alaska. Contrary to the misinformed and dramatic generalizations of the young man who spoke from the Manhattan Institute, we are training local Alaskans in permanent and non-mobile jobs that will ensure the economic vitality of not only their families, but of their communities and your state. When implemented from a complete industry utilization perspective, motion picture and television production is the most cost-efficient and economically viable development engine for the current situation in Alaska. It is not beholden to conflicting environmental pressures and geopolitical policies that govern the price of oil. Is not affected by the perceived distance that Alaska is from the lower 48 and that would cause other industries to initially shy away. It does not need long-term infrastructure planning and building before commencing business. It is ready to show up and start business today and be completely scalable to Alaska's needs. It is these new and unrealized highly skilled technical jobs that are the true ROI to the Treasury and the state. The argument that there is no broad-based tax, no income tax, and as such, to recoup the film tax exempt dollars spent by the program is a misguided and misunderstood interpretation of how a tax subsidy should work. The true ROI is the uncoupling of the Treasury to the price of oil. The true ROI is the future economic growth of the new industry that will bring the best and brightest of the global technology trade to Alaska. When implemented appropriately, with fair checks and balances between the administration and private enterprise, a tax subsidy can be a short-term investment with a long-term return. Private enterprise has been diligently laying the groundwork to use the incentives to achieve everything the previous legislature and administration had held for, and so much more. I sincerely urge you to drop SB 39 and keep the existing film tax incentive program in place. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, I will be wrapping up today's Labor and Commerce Committee hearing. Our next meeting will be March 3rd, 2015 on Tuesday at 1:30, and I would like to request that those individuals who would be calling in from an off-net location would first contact my office. Senator Mia Costello, my number is 465-4968. And with that, I want to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.